Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
And about... Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content. But you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Lisa Hendy and Friends show. Very excited today to welcome on to the show a first-time guest and someone who is a new friend in my life. We're sisters in Christ and both published by the same beautiful publisher, Ave Maria Press. Joining us today is Emily Diardo, and Emily is a Catholic writer, a speaker, and lay Dominican who shows that an imperfect life can be filled with joy and fulfillment. Her brand new book, Living Memento Mori, My Journey Through the Stations of the Cross, was published in January by Ave Maria Press. Welcome to the show, Emily Diardo.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a real treat. I love, love, love your book. And I was so excited to get it, especially leading into the Lent season. I'm kind of curious to have you start off by telling us a little bit more about what brought you to write this particular book at this point in your life.
So I had always wanted to write a book about my experience with cystic fibrosis and lung transplant. And I knew that I wanted it to have a strong spiritual focus because there really aren't any books like that on the market. So I had always known that I wanted to write it. And when I submitted my proposal to Ave Maria Press, my editor actually suggested taking my story and focusing it on the Stations of the Cross, which I thought was a really original and interesting take. So that's how the book sort of came into being in the form that it was eventually published as.
It's beautiful. So let me ask you, because there are a few things that maybe people may not be familiar with. The first thing I wanted to ask you about is cystic fibrosis, which you beautifully describe your journey in the book. But for folks who haven't seen the book yet, what are some of the considerations and health considerations with cystic fibrosis?
So cystic fibrosis, or CF, it's a genetic illness. So I was born with it, but I wasn't actually diagnosed until I was 11 years old, which is actually kind of late. Most people now are diagnosed either, you know, soon after birth or as, you know, toddlers. CF affects a lot of the different systems in the body, but mostly the lungs and the digestive system. And the problem is that the mucus in our body is really thick. We have a problem with how salt is regulated in our bodies. And so it clogs our lungs and breeds infections and eventually, you know, just basically destroys your lungs. We can have problems with our pancreas and our digestive system. So that's why a lot of us are really thin. And there's no cure. So when I was in college, my health had actually gotten to a really precarious point. And we knew that if I was going to, you know, live past my 23rd birthday, I was going to need a double lung transplant.
Wow. What a thing to face as a young adult. And I know you have a great support network around you, but your faith has always also been a big support to you. And so the other two things that I wanted to ask you about, because they're the two things that you couple in this book, I think most of our listeners are familiar with the devotion to the Stations of the Cross, but you write about that through the prism of living memento mori. And so can you talk a little bit about memento mori and what that means for the average person, for anybody out there, whether we're 2 or 92.
Okay. So living memento mori. Memento mori means remember death or remember that you will die. And it's actually a really old practice that's not just connected to Christians. The ancient, you know, Roman generals had people remind them that, you know, they were going to die, that all their glory was fleeting. Queen Victoria wore mourning brooches, which were connected to memento mori. So essentially, the idea is to remember that this life isn't all we have. And as Christians, we always want to be working toward our goal, which is to get to heaven and to spend, you know, eternity with Jesus. And so when we live memento mori, we have the focus on our heavenly home and our end goal, as opposed to just living for this world and, you know, acclaim and honor in this world.
And you have the person who introduced me to this devotion or this spiritual practice, Sister Teresa Noble, a daughter of St. Paul, has written a very beautiful foreword to the book. I think for a lot of us who never really knew, I feel embarrassed to say that I was like 50 something before I learned about memento mori, but it was through Sister's work. How did you feel about having her participate in the project?
So memento mori was actually something that we added as we sort of refined my book proposal. We were just finding all these different things that we could tie in. And when we started talking about memento mori, my editor said, well, you know, it would be great if we could get Sister Teresa to write the foreword to the book. And, you know, we were really lucky that she wrote such a beautiful foreword.
She really did. And she's really kind of known for this. So, you know, when you talk about this and the blending of your own journey into the living of the Stations of the Cross, an obvious question is, you know, sometimes we just don't really feel like picking up the cross today. So I'm sure you have that in your life. How do you deal with those moments?
Right, exactly. And, you know, that to me was something that I really wanted to get across, was that even though Christ tells us, you know, pick up your cross and follow me, a lot of the time we just don't want to do it. And, you know, I've definitely had those moments in my life, and I still have those moments in my life where, you know, I see there's, you know, a new health development or, you know, something happens in my life and it's like, really, God, really? So it's not something that, you know, we do once and it's over. It's something that we have to keep doing, and we're not always going to be happy about it. And I think that's okay. You know, I think that that's just, you know, part of our spiritual journey, and, you know, being honest with Jesus and saying, I really don't want to do this, so you're going to have to help me do this because I can't do it by myself.
So you organize the book into 14 chapters. Is that intentional with the Stations of the Cross?
Yes, we have each chapter focuses on one of the stations, and then there's an epilogue, which, you know, corresponds to the resurrection.
Mm-hmm. And were you actively in the process, like, were you actively devoted to praying the Stations of the Cross as you kind of conceived the project, or has that become more of a part of your life in the last year or two?
I've always really liked the Stations of the Cross. You know, I went to Catholic school, K-8. And so, you know, praying the Stations was very natural. We prayed them, you know, every Friday in the church. And I was born on Good Friday. So I've always felt, you know, a very special attachment in my prayer life to the Stations, to, you know, to Jesus's passion and resurrection. So when my editor suggested it, it was kind of like a, oh yeah, duh moment. Because yeah, I have always had, you know, a devotion to the Stations.
Yeah, and I think people think of the Stations of the Cross during the season of Lent, as you and I record, we're walking through the season of Lent. And one beautiful part of the book is the appendix, which you actually include a memento mori way of the cross. Did you read those devotions yourself?
I did.
Do you have a favorite station?
I'm sorry.
Do you have a favorite station?
Oh gosh. You know, it varies. It through my life, there have been different stations that have meant different things to me. When Jesus meets his mother is one of my favorites. I've always found the station where Jesus is nailed to the cross, the 11 station, to be one that I'm drawn to in prayer, because Jesus is just at that moment, I mean, he's completely powerless. You know, he is nailed to the cross. He can't move. Everything he's doing is dictated by other people. And, you know, I found in my life that that's something that's been particularly relevant in moments where, you know, I've been having a hard time.
I wanted to give our listeners a little sampling of the stations, and I thought maybe, can I read the 12th station? Would that be okay if I shared that?
Mm-hmm.
This is the 12th station. Jesus dies on the cross. We adore you, O Christ, and we praise you because by your holy cross, you have redeemed the world. You died, Lord, for love. When I come to the end of my earthly life, help me to surrender myself entirely to your will, to place my whole being into your loving hands. Lord, give me the grace to die in your peace and with your name in my heart and on my lips. Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Such a beautiful kind of taste of your writing, Emily. And I'm kind of curious, I guess, like the huge thing that as you and I record that's going on along with the season of Lent is coronavirus. Who knows by the time this is published what will be happening, because it seems to be changing almost hour by hour. But it has so much of us in the mindset of considering our health, considering the health of our loved ones. And it's almost an invitation to begin to kind of, for people who haven't already lived memento mori, to begin to get in that mindset. What would you say to somebody who's maybe experiencing this type of spirituality for the very first time that can encourage them right now about memento mori?
I think the first thing is, you know, to tell people that it isn't a morbid or negative way to pray or spirituality. I think that's something that people immediately think of is, they think of, you know, Hamlet with the skull and death. And so they sort of shy away from the idea of memento mori. But I think it's something that, you know, as you start to practice it, it can bring your life into focus in a really nice way. At least that's what I found as I've practiced it, because, you know, it focuses on the idea that you really only have right now to live your life and to do what God is asking you to do. And so I find it to be very practical and comforting in a lot of ways.
You know, for somebody who hasn't picked up the book yet, which they definitely should, again, it's Living Memento Mori, My Journey Through the Stations of the Cross by Emily DiArdo. Emily, is there maybe like one kind of like practical thing that somebody can do aside from reading the book, you know, to implement a memento mori mindset into their prayer life every day?
I think one of the best things that people can do is to do the daily examine. And I talk about this in the book. And the examine is basically, it's an examination of conscience that you do before you go to bed. And you look back over the day and you see what you did well and you see what you didn't do so well. And, you know, you offer it to God. I usually say, in an act of contrition. And then you think about the next day, think, okay, you know, these are the bad things that happened today. How can I make that better tomorrow? It doesn't take a lot of time. It's pretty easy to do. And I think that's a good way to start.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to start. And I have had to train myself not to say that I'm going to do my exam in bed because I'm one of those people. I'm the anti-insomnia person. I fall asleep the minute my head hits a pillow. So examine out of bed is my way to do it. It's such a beautiful book. And every chapter ends with reflection questions, which makes this a really nice book for, you know, personal journaling or to do with a group of friends or family. I was actually thinking about how really special it might be for a husband and wife to do this together during the season of Lent. And it's just a great, really great resource that you've created. As we're running out of time, I'm just wondering if there are kind of any closing thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners or any further encouragement about living memento mori.
I think, you know, one of the biggest things I've learned, you know, throughout my life is that Jesus is always with us in whatever we are suffering, even when we feel alone, even when we feel completely abandoned. Jesus understands those feelings because he experienced them, and he is always with us. There's never a moment where we are alone in our suffering.
Well, Emily, you are half my age and twice my wisdom. So I want you to know that I'm just so grateful for your work and for what you've taught me through the gift of this book. And just keep it up and keep up your encouragement on the social media and all the writing that you do. And just know that our family is praying for you and really grateful for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, and where can folks find you, especially on social media, if they want to follow you?
I am on Twitter and Instagram. If you go to my website, it's just emilymdiardo.com. I have all the links there. And I have a Facebook page. So all those links are on my website.
Awesome. Well, definitely, if you take a look at your show notes on your podcast app or wherever you're listening right now, you can check out the link to emilymdiardo.com. Emily, God bless you and your great work.
Thank you so much.
Well, that is it for this week's episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends. You can find all of our previous episodes, information on today's guest, Emily Diardo, and my contact information at my website, lisahendy.com, or just find me on social media at Lisa Hendy. Until next time, have an awesome day and God bless.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPIIteachings, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/redboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.